Welcome to today's episode of Neural Pathways, Where Your Neuroscience Degree Can Take You, where we explore the wealth of career options out there for neuroscience grads. I'm your host, Rana Ghaffouri, and this podcast is presented by Healthy Brains, Healthy Lives at McGill University. Hi, everyone. Today's guest is Dr. Emily Coffey. She completed her PhD at McGill in 2016, and she's now an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Concordia University. Emily, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
To start off, can you tell me a bit about your day-to-day as a psychology professor at Concordia?
So I am a psychology professor, but I have trained in neuroscience and cognitive sciences. So one of the things I often get asked is, what exactly is the difference between the two? And there isn't really much of a difference. It's a series of overlapping fields, and it's more about the work that you do. And I do work like anyone else who's a professor. I do some research and some teaching, running my lab and also applying for grants. And there's a certain amount of service and administration that we have to do as well.
So which part of that do you like best?
Definitely the research. I love to work with my students and to toss our ideas around and to be coming up with new projects, and also to keep my hands in the data myself and to be doing some of my own analysis.
What projects are you working on right now?
Too many to list, but the majority of our projects are about the auditory system, experience-dependent plasticity, so how our brain changes with practice and with experience, for which we use musicianship as a model. And I'm also interested in the relationship with sleep. So when we learn something during the day, which aspects of that learning is reconsolidated and is sort of ingrained into long-term memory as we are sleeping.
Oh, that's so interesting. Is this similar to the research you did during your PhD?
My PhD work was with Dr. Robert Zatori at the MNI, and his work is about the auditory system. So I learned that aspect quite well. But I also wanted to bring in something new, and that so I went to do a postdoc in Germany with Dr. Jan Born and learned about sleep research. And so now I'm trying to combine the two together. So it's half what I did with my PhD and half something entirely new.
What motivated you to pursue academia to begin with?
Oh, it's a long question. So it was more accidental, I suppose. So I had a lot of trouble as a young adult deciding what I wanted to do. I had, I think, seven or so careers in mind, and they were archaeologist, search and rescue pilot, microbiologist, astronaut, writer, artist, or park ranger.
It's a wide range.
Yes, and I had a lot of trouble deciding. So I entered a flying company instead of going into university right away, and I was learning to fly airplanes when I crashed with my
stroke. Wow.
So what happened then was I ended up in hospital for a couple of weeks, sort of reconsidering my choices. And I decided that maybe flying by itself wasn't enough for me, because what I really liked about it was learning myself and watching other people learn. So it was the process of the human change and the human learning that was really of interest to me. And that, I think, has been a theme throughout, although I've approached it in very different ways. So on paper, I look like I've done a reasonably straight line route from high school to university professor, but in reality there have been a lot of turns and twists along the way. One of them was this airplane accident. Another one was also working in this flying company. I really wanted to take some time off and go to Ecuador with one of my high school friends, and the head of the company said I couldn't do it, or when I came back my job would not be there anymore. And I wasn't really getting paid at that time. It was still, we were setting things up and it was all pretty voluntary. So I said, well, I don't think 2 weeks is going to make much difference. And he said, well, basically it was his way or not at all. So I didn't go to Ecuador and I regretted it. And I thought, I don't want to miss out on all of these interesting things that I'd like to do just because I'm focused on one specific goal. And his approach was also saying that you should set some very high goal and you should put all your energy into it. And I think that works for some people, but for me, I didn't want to miss those interesting things along the way.
Right, you got to take those opportunities when you still have the chance to.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention how I got to the professor part. So I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Ottawa in psychology while doing my flying as a part-time job. And then I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, really. So I applied for a job at the European Space Agency, and I moved there in Bonn, Germany, to work at the European Astronaut Center training astronauts, something called human behavior and performance. So that's trying to teach people how to work as a team and how to communicate and that sort of thing. And that was really fun. We got to do a lot of interesting missions, like going inside a large cave system in Sardinia in order to put astronauts in an environment that's in some way similar to what they would experience in spaceflight, in the sense that it's isolated and confined. And to see how they behave, and then to figure out how to coach them and how to improve their behaviors so that if they're on a long-term mission, they will be successful and not fight with each other and not burn out.
Right, and build the kind of team-building aspect of it, since they're stuck with the same people for so long, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. So it, as some households are dealing with it.
Currently.
Yeah. So that was very interesting. But the problem was the opportunities within the space agency are quite limited for someone with a psychology background, because most of the work that the space agency does is actually managing other projects and their engineering projects. So there wasn't really anywhere I could go in there. I could have stayed maybe there for a while. But I decided that what I was missing was the intellectual stimulation of the science.
So you've always been really interested in the human behavior side of things.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So then I did a master's degree in brain and cognitive sciences at the University of Amsterdam, which was a great and very experimentally oriented program. And that was a lot of fun. And at the same time, I was still working remotely for the space agency. So going back and forth, kind of in between classes and things like that, mm-hmm. which is a whole lot of work, but also fun to still be involved. Yeah. And then I came to do my PhD at McGill. And topically, I was actually trying to work in sleep research, but the first lab I joined turned out not to be an excellent fit for me. So I went to Robert's lab mainly because I felt that he was working at the right level for me. I was interested in neuroimaging and basic questions or fundamental questions about how the brain works and how it's related to experience. But the topic to do with music and audition, that was not my topic before. It was just because that's what the lab was doing.
Those are such interesting life experiences that you had along the way. So then after your postdoc, how did you go about finding your position at Concordia?
Well, I actually started applying just a few months into my postdoc, and I didn't think I was experienced enough at that time. But I did want to get back to Montreal because that's where my husband and my family are based. So it was... When a position came along in Montreal that seemed to match me pretty well, I applied for it, even though I didn't really think that it would happen. So I ended up only doing a year of postdoc and then going directly into a professor position.
What are some of the skills you gained at your time working in the aerospace industry and the skills you gained during your graduate studies that are helping you in your career now?
Well, for aerospace, I guess getting things done and taking into account risk, deciding whether or not something is worth it, or if, there's always some risk in aviation, whereas if you're sitting at your desk, there's no real risk to anybody. So we're constantly deciding how to prioritize our work or how to decide when we're just going to not do something altogether. So I think that was quite an interesting thing that maybe we don't see so much in an academic environment. Also, just working as a team and getting things done has very practical consequences in aviation. And of course, I'm very interested in human behavior and how people interact. So seeing the results of those team interactions directly in the field is something that I've always sort of kept in mind from that experience. Now for the graduate studies side of things, I think persistence and perseverance are very important. And also realizing that even though you're the smartest person in your class, there are the things that count more. Yes, everyone is smart, but your ability to bring things to a conclusion or to focus on one aspect or to pull a good story out or just to get back into the lab and try something again and again and again if it doesn't work out are much more important than getting the A+ in your undergraduate studies. Another aspect, I guess, that we learn in graduate school is just how to solve problems. And these are not problems that you're trained for necessarily. So a problem will present itself and you have to figure out what the problem is exactly, what's its nature, and go and figure out how to solve it instead of relying on having had a course in it or having had the correct training and background. And I think this is a skill that we can apply in all aspects of our daily life. Even figure out how to fix some part of your house that's falling apart or make your relationships within your family more harmonious harmonious during stressful times. These are things that we learn how to abstract ourselves and to say, okay, what are the core aspects of this problem? And then you can address those problems with different sorts of solutions.
Right. And sort of try and go about figuring it out independently and not being taught exactly step by step how to do a process. Going from being a graduate student to supervising graduate students, how does that feel? And what are some of the things that have helped you be a good supervisor that you learned in your graduate studies?
Well, I think I still have a lot to learn. One thing was just watching how other people successfully or unsuccessfully were mentored in my environment and my peers. And I think for me, the key thing about being a mentor is to care and to make an individualized approach for each person. Because everyone is different. They have different strengths and weaknesses and personalities. And what works for one person is not necessarily going to work for another. But if you have that person's success and interests at heart, and their safety and their mental health and everything, and you make decisions in that direction and they understand that, then hopefully you'll have a successful supervisory relationship and you'll be able to support that person. And it's very satisfying, rewarding when you have given someone some advice or some support and you see that they've grown from that and they're flourishing because of something you did. It's a very nice thing. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been that long. So I don't have to think back all that far, and I'm trying to keep those in mind going forward, is what things seem frustrating and overwhelming and where was the time that I needed just someone to say, you're doing fine, even though there wasn't any kind of practical communication. Just having someone that you respect tell you you're doing a good job really is can be very important at times.
Right. Yeah. And especially currently with everyone being stuck at home, and it's like really overwhelming. So I feel like having that good support is so important. What are some of the things that you would recommend to graduate students who are interested in staying in academia and pursuing a professor track to do now to help them prepare?
Well, I think you should think carefully about whether you actually would enjoy the work, because it's not necessarily the same as the work that you're doing in graduate school. So in graduate studies, you're very focused on your own project and maybe your own skill development. Whereas that's only a relatively small part of what you do as a professor. So there's the teaching aspect and the admin and the service stuff, which take up time. And teaching can be fun, but there are also parts about it that people might not necessarily like grading or dealing with people complaining about grades. No one likes that aspect. It's quite fun to stand up in front of the class and explain things, but you have to appreciate that your students are going to have different levels of interest as well. But even on the research side, you're moving more into a position of applying for grants and planning projects and guiding projects rather than doing the work yourself. Unfortunately, there aren't too many research associate positions that are stable and long-term that people can do just the research. So if you want to be a professor, you also have to think about what that entails, and that it's a very high energy, high dedication, high time commitment type of career, which you might have to compromise other aspects of your life in order to be successful at it, at least at the beginning. So I think you should have a very careful look at the lifestyle first, and then if you decide that yes, that's what you really want to do, and you've considered other alternatives, then there are things you can do to build your CV. I think the most important thing is finding some good mentors, because they will be able to give you personalized feedback and expose you to opportunities that will build your CV and just connect you better to their networks. So I think that has been quite important for me. And of course, publishing well, getting your work finished instead of having piles of projects on your desk that you're just going to run one more analysis. It's actually bringing things to conclusion.
It can be tricky sometimes.
Really important. Yes, for sure. Still is.
So finally, what's the number one piece of advice that you would give yourself if you could go back to when you were a graduate student?
Just don't be afraid to... number one piece. Now I have several.
You can say them all.
Okay. I mean, I think everyone has different challenges. And for me, it's a matter of confidence and feeling if my project is not working out that, I'm not incompetent or an imposter. And yes, I should really be here doing this. I don't even know if I can reassure my current self that's not the case, but at least that I can do some good work if I continue on with the science and if I sort of persevere, because you waste time doubting yourself when you should really just get back to it. And also to follow things that you're interested in, and that it will work out if you do that and if you work hard, but you don't necessarily have to follow a fixed path or to do certain things. It's just that if you continue to be interested in your work, that's the most important thing.
Right. That's really good advice. And your whole story of how you got there is super interesting and very different from anything else I've heard. Emily, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Check out the Neural Pathways webpage if you wanted to learn more about Dr. Emily Coffey.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Neural Pathways, where your neuroscience degree can take you, presented by Healthy Brains, Healthy Lives. Don't forget to check out our website, mcgill.ca/HBHL, for links to previous episodes and resources, and follow HBHL on Twitter, @HBHLMcGill. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice so you never miss a new episode. See you next time!